Hey, this is Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and you're listening to Always Hold On to Smallville.
Previously on Smallville.
If anyone's going to stop this phantom, it's going to be me. I took a little piece of your DNA, and now I'm going to take your life.
We have what we need.
It looks like your fleet of fighters are about to get their jet fuel.
I had a run-in with the last phantom. I have to leave Earth's atmosphere to heal.
I'm leaving, Lex.
I think I could just let you walk away.
Lana!
Lana, she's dead, son.
I don't believe you.
You killed her!
I'm some kind of meteor freak, aren't I? I'm not going anywhere until you tell me what's really going on at this camp. You can't die!
You're under arrest for the murder of Lana Luthor.
Chloe?
What the hell are you? I'm you. A little more bizarre.
And now, the season premiere of Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show. They're from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore. I'm joined by managing editor of Fangoria Magazine, Meredith Borders. What's up, Meredith?
Hi, Zach. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Yeah, so we kind of circled each other online for a while about being Smallville fans and you being on the podcast. And we actually both live in Houston, so small world.
So
all that to say, first time guest, welcome aboard, and tell us a little bit about how you came to be such a big Smallville fan.
Thank you. Yeah, it is funny to I think maybe the only other Houstonian that I'm friends with that loves Smallville, other than my husband, who I forced to love Smallville. So it's nice to have another like local. I first watched Smallville. I mean, I watched the pilot actually and was really into it. I watched it live. But then, I was in college and I was busy and I didn't have a chance to like follow it regularly until I remember very clearly. It was season 3, Crisis is the episode that I saw live and then was like, oh, you know, I really like this show. And so I actually like went to, I lived in Austin at the time. I went to University of Texas and I went to I Love Video and Vulcan Video and all these like different video stores in town to rent all of the different, because you could only rent like a few discs at a time from any video store. So I went to all these different stores to rent the first 2 seasons, every disc, and caught up and then started watching it live. And then I have to tell you, I have seen every episode so many times. It's crazy. I just constantly, it's my comfort show. It is always on a loop. I think it's pretty fair to say I've seen all like 200 plus episodes at least 4 times, and those are the worst episodes, and then the best episodes like 10 to 20. I don't know. It's crazy. Like it's really an obsession. And I have every Clark Kent from Smallville action figure ever made. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, the comics and
the Funko Pops.
Yeah, the Funko Pops, of course. I have the Justice line of action figures and the Justice figures in Funko Pop. Mm-hmm. I'm it's so funny because I don't have a lot of collectible obsessions like that. Like, you know, I work for it in the pop culture industry and I love pop culture, but I'm not a big collector. But something about Smallville, I'm just like, I have to have it all. So I'm like constantly trolling eBay for it, you know.
It is nice to have these, I don't call Smallville niche, right? Because it was on broadcast TV, but it's like, you could theoretically collect everything made for Smallville, and that makes me feel good. You know,
it's so funny you say that. That's exactly how I think about it, because it's like really intimidating to become just a collector of comic books, because like in general, because you know there's millions.
You will never get them all.
Exactly. Or like Star Trek or Star Wars, like you're never going to get it all. And you know, I do actually think Smallville's niche. I don't know if you've ever been to San Diego Comic-Con, have you?
I have been a couple times, yes.
I remember this moment. I was walking the floor with my friend Evan, and I was like, okay, we're looking for Smallville stuff. And, you know, here are the items that, you know, exist that I don't have. Let's see if we can get them. And we looked and looked and looked and couldn't find anything. And Evan was like, Meredith, you might actually be the only legit nerd here, because you're the only person whose fandom is not represented on this floor. Like, that's how nerdy you are. And I was like, oh, I guess you're right.
Yeah, I've been a couple times, and I went the year after Smallville was over, so there was no Smallville to be found there. But I did the first time I went, it was 2005, and I was I didn't get to see any panels or anything, but I did find there was a you know, one of their big, you know, just posters of things, and it was the Clark, Lex, and Lana like season 3 yes! promo shot. So I got a picture in front of it. I was wearing that blue shirt with the red shirt with the blue borders on it, like the collar and sleeves that Clark had. I mean, I wonder why I had that shirt, right? But anyway, I took my picture in front of it. Anyway, so that's as close as I got to any kind of Smallville experience at Comic-Con. But
1 year I had luck, and again, same as you, I was going after the show was over. So I didn't have a job that would like take me there until after the show was over. But 1 year I was there, they had an exhibit of different costumes from different Supermen, and they had the red leather jacket from season 10. And there's a picture of me. I have never smiled so big. I was just like ear to ear grinning. It was very exciting for me. I touched it. I know you're not supposed to, but I did.
Are you okay? So his Superman costumes, right? Do you like his red jacket, or do you like the blur trench coat get up from season 9?
I like the red jacket. The blur trench coat is just, it makes sense for season 9, but which is like a little bit of a darker season and a darker journey for Clark. But it's not freaking Superman. Like, I prefer the members only jacket and a t-shirt to that, you know, because at least it's red and blue. So.
You got a point there. Hey, but black is in for Superman these days, it seems. But
I don't approve.
I lean towards the trench coat because it kind of feels like a cape. I think maybe that's what puts me over the edge, because it's flapping
really
in the wind.
That's a good point. It does flap behind him in a very like satisfying way, but I need that color. So,
but that being said, do you have a favorite era of the show? I mean, because you know there are like there's the Smallville years, what we're currently in, the college dropout years, then there's the Metropolis years, right? So, do you have a favorite era?
Well, I mean, my favorite era is the Smallville years. What I love best about the show is sort of the family unit with, you know, Martha and Jonathan. And I love the warmth, like the visual warmth I think the cinematography is really, really beautiful and, you know, wholesome during those seasons. But you know, that's because you said era. If you'd asked favorite season, I would actually say season 6, which you just wrapped up.
Season 6, really?
I know. Okay. Isn't that funny? So I did this like, because I'm not good at ranking things. So I was like, what is my favorite season? I have no idea. So what I did was go through and rate every episode and then calculate which, you know, like then take the average for every season. And I'm like, season 6 has the highest score. And that's how I like determine what my favorite season was. And then since then, I've realized it is. I mean, I really love Jimmy and I love Oliver. And I think that they're great additions to the cast. And I think that it skates between the Smallville years and the Metropolis years really well. You still have that warmth. He's on the farm a lot, but you're starting to get some of the exciting kind of Daily Planet, you know, moments. And so, I don't know. Season 6 is a good transition for me.
You know, I got to say, season 6, it was in my lower rung, like thinking about it. But then when I rewatched it, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
So do you have a favorite season? What's your favorite season?
You know, when I'm watching the show, I would say like, 1's my favorite season, 2's my favorite season, 3's my favorite season. 4 was not. 4 was immediately my least favorite season for various reasons. But like, then 5 became my favorite season. And then after that, it wasn't until season 9, I was like, okay, this is my favorite season. So
I really like 8. I think that
the first half of 8, am I right? Yeah.
The first half of 8 is exactly correct. You're so right. I actually think 8 has the worst season finale of the entire series.
100%. 100%.
Drives me crazy. What my theory about season 4, which I feel you on that, But I think that the arc is really stupid. Like, I hate all of the stuff with the stones and the witch
stones,
and all
yeah,
that.
Witches, no so way, bad. No way.
But it reminds me of Buffy, which I also think has a really weak season arc, but also has a few really phenomenal individual episodes. So I think season four of Smallville is the same way, where, for instance, I think Blank is incredible. I think Blank is, I mean, Blank is one of my favorite episodes of the entire series, and it's in four. I also love Spirit, which is really goofy. But,
oh, Spirit. Oh.
I know that's a weird thing to say. I love it, though. I think it's like the show at its silliest, but also still has a lot of heart and emotion. And I don't know.
I see your Blank and Spirit, and I raise you Onyx and Run and Transference, which are three of the best episodes of the show, right?
Yes, and they're all like in a row, you know?
I know, yeah. It's very impressive. And then you still have, like you said, the family unit is still there, yeah. Right? We're still, mm-hmm. You know, got the Kents around and all that. So I would say, but you know, arc-wise, I'd say it's so crazy to me. Four was so out of whack with that. But then by the time they got around to season nine, like for me to even tell you that one of my favorite seasons of Smallville, arguably my favorite sometimes, doesn't have Lex in it, that shows you how strong season nine is. I mean, Lex is like, that's what you come to Smallville for as a Luthers, and he's not there. No Lex or Lionel in season nine. I mean, come on.
It's so funny. And, you know, now that we know this, now that we're on the podcast together and we can talk about it as colleagues, but season nine's like one of my least favorite seasons.
What? All right. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, Meredith.
I'm sorry. Here's my problem with it. Mm-hmm. I hate Callum Blue as Zod. I just
really do you not like Terry Stamp as Zod, because he pretty much is the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing at all. I think I love Terry Stamp as Zod. He's my Zod. I feel like Callum Blue is too. I don't know. He's just too scenery chewing. He's too smug. He doesn't really have any actual like power or dignity to him. So I have trouble believing him as a actual formidable foe to freaking Tom Welling, who's a giant. You know.
Now you gotta be worried about season nine. I don't know how I'm gonna feel when I get there. I'm just questioning my fandom now.
No, I'm sure you're right. There's no accounting for taste. And many people I know who love Smallville think it's crazy that I don't like season nine. So you're not alone in thinking that.
Last hot button issue. Then we'll have some lots of fun conversation about this in the future. I know already, I can already tell. But what's your take on the series finale?
I love it. I love it. I'm so happy with it. I mean, I think that it's a little bit overstuffed, and I think that the dark side stuff, you know, I don't think they let enough happen early enough in season 10, so they had to shove all of it into the series finale.
That's a common problem most seasons.
Exactly. That's so true. And I love the finales. I don't care. Like, I just want mm-hmm. nonstop action flying at my face for a season premiere and finale, which Smallville always
they
delivers
always
on.
Other than Doomsday, they usually always
except
deliver,
for season right? 8, which is garbage. But I think it's really beautiful. I think it's, you know, it wraps up a lot of arcs that I care so much about, like on an emotional level. Mm-hmm. It's like the moment where Clark is kind of in the barn and the, you know, montage of all of his greatest saves throughout the series. And then all of a sudden he's flying, and then, oh man, I'm so into it. I love it. I like get chills just thinking about it.
I have issues with the finale, but at the end of the day, I'm like, yeah, what, honestly, Rosamund coming back saves the finale for me.
Oh,
right?
I love that scene so much. I mean, that's it makes like me the, so happy.
It's like the best. Like if there's one scene of Smallville I probably watch more than anyone, it'd be because I'm not one to. I know a lot of people do this. Like I go watch scenes every now and then on YouTube or something. There's like a handful of scenes that I watch. That's probably number one of him.
It's
I mean that
so
that
good.
Can you imagine how upsetting it'd be if he didn't come back?
I know. Yes. I was watching it live, and as I'm sure you were, and I mean, I knew by that point that he was, but I was like obsessively reading headlines, terrified he wouldn't. I was like, oh, please God, let him come back. Let him come back. Let him come back. You know,
because there were headlines like he's not coming back. I was like, no, what's the point of the show?
I know. And they had set it up with like the clones and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they were prepared for him not to come back. But then the fact that he did and just, you know, those actors being best friends in real life and like right. seeing that reunion. So good.
It was everything. So yeah. Do you feel like Crisis on Infinite Earths did it justice, or did you like that?
Well, I gotta say,
hitting you with all these hot button questions now.
I know, I'm having so much fun. Like no one ever asked me about this. Nobody cares what I think about this. Usually, I have since come around on Crisis on Infinite Earths. I had too high expectations of what it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like you remember at the beginning of is it the beginning of season 9 where it's the flash forward? You know. I'm not talking about in Homecoming, but I'm talking about there's like
yes, season 9 Salvation is the that's my favorite episode. Yeah, and they have the planet.
That is a great episode. Yeah, that's a fantastic episode. That's what I wanted out of Crisis on Infinite Earths, and so my expectations were there. And then I have since, and then it's funny because I mean I assume you're watching Superman and Lois.
Oh, of course.
Superman and Lois is actually like delivering on just a like longer sort of timeline what we got for that glimpse in Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, and it's like it is nice. I do like seeing them on the farm with kids and stuff, but it was hard for me to hear that our, you know, our Superman gave up his powers. That really hurt. It hurt me.
I liked it from the jump, and to me it kind of like, I like that ending. That's, to me, that's like a nice little button ending to this character, right? Because it's the whatever happened to Man of Tomorrow ending and all that. And I've talked about it before on the podcast. And I mean, look, if I really didn't like it, I wouldn't sit here and tell people I liked it. But I generally liked it.
Well, I now do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, you got to have time with these things, you know, because
exactly.
I mean, I'm sure I said probably on record, like, if he doesn't wear the Superman costume, I don't even want him to come back.
Exactly. And then I'm exactly. So yeah, once I had time to sit with my expectations and like put them away and then like just, you know, enjoy it for what it actually was. I do think it was like, it was perfect. You know, I mean, that's really how Tom Welling always like treated the character. It wasn't about Superman, you know, so it made sense. It's just, I had gotten so into the season 11 comics. And so I was really loving, and I just kept picturing Tom and all of those, you know, plot lines. And so I just wanted to see that live, but you know, whatever, right. Like, we don't always get what we want.
Right. Well, that's the story of Smallville. There you go. So, but no, that's great. So that there's your rundown over Meredith that's coming at all of our Smallville stuff, guys. So no, we'll have some fun talking about this more in the future, no doubt. So,
definitely.
But hey, season 7 is here. Right?
Yay.
What a change, right? I mean, we got Martha Kent is gone. Lana's dead. No, she's not, but they
should not. She's dead for like a hot minute.
They don't even, it's like they let you think Chloe was dead longer than they let you think Lana was dead between seasons.
That's so true.
Speaking of that, it reminds me, you know, obviously they quote unquote killed Chloe off between season 3 and 4. They killed Lana off, quote unquote, between season 6 and 7. But what season 4 did was they changed the opening credits and they left Allison Mack out. I was like, wow, okay, that's interesting, right? They're leaning into it.
And you have a whole episode of thinking she's dead. And even the tag at the end of Crusade, where he's like, the grave is empty. Even then I was like, that doesn't mean anything.
That could mean anything. Yeah. It's like, well, they couldn't find the body. It was, you know, so but here it's interesting that you know, we have some new opening credits and we'll talk about those in a second, but it's like, they actually switch Kristen Kirk and Michael Rosenbaum. Michael Rosenbaum was second. And I'm like, oh, wow, okay. To me, I always think that should have been the right order.
Exactly. Anyway. About time. I mean, come on.
Maybe they were like, come on, Mike, we'll put you second in the credits. You've come back from season 8. He's like, oh, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, oh, wait, did they do the same? Because obviously we all knew Lana was coming back.
Right.
But it's like, oh, did they do the same thing again? And then like, oh, wait, Lana's third? I'm like, you guys didn't even try to fool us this time.
I know. Like, come on. Really didn't.
But anyway, season 7, and then Kara is here, right? Kara Zor-El. Oh my goodness! So I mean, she is in this episode. We'll briefly touch on her. She doesn't do much, you know. Next week, when the episode called Kara is, we're going to delve into that conversation. That's the more appropriate time. But just it's like when you heard they were going to bring Supergirl in to Smallville. What did you think back in the day?
I was thrilled. I did not think it was going to be what it was. What, you know, what it ended up being. And I mean, you know. Again, having had many years to take my expectations out of it, like I get what they're going for with her being like a, you know, kind of poppy teenager. But I was like, you know, I think in the first episode we got what I wanted, which she seems really powerful and mysterious and, you know, and then, you know, with the like weather girls and stuff, that's what it's kind of going off the rails for me and before they brought it back in. I was thrilled. I was so excited. And I really do like Laura Vandervoort. I think that's really good casting.
I love Laura Vandervoort. I actually met her at a Comic-Con at Wizard World in Austin, actually. And she was great. She gave me a bump in for the podcast, and she was delightful. Oh, so it was really nice to meet her. She really is. And she really kind of appreciates the fandom and stuff. And
she absolutely does. And she's really made such a, like, very cool career for herself in these kind of genre shows. Absolutely. I love that she's like, that's my like arena. This is where I shine. And she's great at it.
That's what you gotta like, you gotta like own that, right? And now she has consistently worked since. She's like, fine, yeah, I'll be a vampire, I'll be an alien, exactly. I'll be a werewolf, I'll be anything
I'll
you
want. I'll be in the new Supergirl show. Whatever.
Paint me blue, it's all good. So she's fantastic. Exactly. And so yeah, obviously we'll get in that later on in the season, but she has more to do. But it is I mean, at the time I was like, really, Supergirl? Like, he's not even Superman yet, so.
Oh,
but.
Okay, that's an interesting perspective. I did like, because, I mean, that's how I've always viewed it, is that Supergirl's sort of the older, you know,
of course,
cousin.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the moments that I love most in the season is her, like, trying to teach him to fly and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think that's so charming and really, really fun and great. So, yeah, I didn't have a problem with it because I didn't think it was gonna, and also they'd sort of introduced the concept already with Adrian Palicki, you know, in season 3.
Oh, yeah, the like second Supergirl.
Yeah, exactly.
Always with these shows, there's always two of everything. It's the, exactly. Always the way they do it.
So I was, like, prepared for it. Like, my brain had already wrapped itself around the idea that eventually we might see Kara on the show.
There you go. But, hey, for right now, we got to talk about Bizarro. So let's get into it. Bizarro.
Phantom. He took Clark's body. Just a few cells. Clark's still alive. He's out there. And you will help me kill him. I need meteor rocks. A lot of them. I'd never help you kill Clark. Lex, redemption doesn't suit you. Why protect a Clark Kent who hates you when you can help the one who wants to be your ally? It's what you've always wanted. Isn't it, Lex?
Bizarro is the first episode of Smallville's seventh season. It aired on September 27th, 2007. It was written by Kelly Saunders and Brian Peterson and directed by Michael Rohl.
Which is crazy. It's the first premiere that hasn't been directed by Marshall or Beeman since the pilot. So that, to me, is very striking.
There is a transition here, right? Of obviously, this is Alan Miles' last season, right? We'll talk about that down the road of this season, but there's a transition behind, in front of the camera and behind the camera, frankly,
totally.
season seven, right? So it's a very transitional year. And you know what? Just, I got a shout out to the Smallville DVDs, because finally, the previously on Smallville is back. Season six didn't have it. I think season five didn't, like, so I kind of go back and forth between, you know, Hulu and my DVDs watching these things, and for several episodes recently, there was no previously on. I'm like, how are you supposed to know what's going on? Like,
exactly. Like, also, the previously ons are so well edited. Like, I just love
them. They make Smallville look like the most epic show of all time.
Because,
they condense it down into, like, 2 minutes, 22 episodes, right?
And also, when it's one of the, it's not always, but when it's one of the cast members saying previously on Smallville, like when it's Tom Welling or Annette O'Toole, I'm like, yes, right. I live for that.
Yes. They got, I mean, speaking of the finale, right? We're just talking about, they used Rosenbaum's clip for that. I'm like, oh my God, he's
so
like, anyway.
Exciting.
But yeah, so we get our, here's what happened last season, right? And then we cut back, and obviously, you know, Bizarro has broken out of this dam, and here we are, right? And we get a nice, you know, dad, his son, and their dog just fishing right on the river, and nothing bad's going to happen there, right? But then we see the aftermath of what was going on, the dam explosion at the last season. We get Lois and Chloe. Lois, who is dragging Chloe's dead body out of the dam. And apparently Erica Durant hates water. And so she's on record saying this. And in Smallville, the official companion season 7 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold. She had this to say about having to act in the water. She said, quote, "It's just something I have to deal with now. You've got to go for it. If your character has to do it, you've got to do it. It's kind of like Murphy's Law. They really do a good job here. Unless you're outside in a lake that's frozen and they can't do anything about it, they usually warm up the water for you, so it wasn't bad." So, because, yeah, you think about the last two episodes, they're in this water and dirt. Ugh.
Or, like, Aqua, she spends half of Aqua underwater.
Right. So, but, and yeah, and she you know, gets drowned almost in a bunch of episodes, too, so good on her for going ahead first, right? But we see her, and then we see Lex, and he's been arrested for the murder of Lana Luthor, right? So when the dam breaks, all the water starts flushing through, and then he's in the back of a police car, you know, and just goes into the water. So Lex and cars and water have bad history, don't they?
Yes. So. It's a very nice flashback, obviously, to the pilot.
All right. It's like poetry. It rhymes. With George Lucas. So so then we get Clark and Bizarro fighting in the woods. Because this is the famous Smallville woods. I mean, every show in Canada shot there, we see these woods, right? Okay, I love Tom Welling when he plays the villain. Like, I love Clark Luthor. I love Red Kryptonite Clark. You're right. I mean, it's good stuff, right? This might be a hot take. This is probably my least favorite Clark is evil performance. Bizarro, because she's like, "Hey, I'm Zorro."
It's what they do to his voice, and they don't need to. Like, I think, as you say, like Tom Welling is very convincing in the villain role. You don't have to modify his voice and make him sound like a weird robot. Like, yes. Tom Welling has a very deep voice anyway. So deepening it sounds silly.
It just, you do a double take, like, what is that? Oh, he's doing something different, because he doesn't do it all the time, because he was just around normal people trying to quote-unquote act like Clark. He just talks normal. Right. When he's talking to Clark, I guess this is Lex, this is his real voice. It just made me laugh. It made me think of Green Arrow. Like, I'm the Green Arrow. Yeah. So exactly. They use the same filter. But, you know, they scuffle a little bit in the woods, and it's something very interesting here. We get the information that not only did he copy Clark's DNA, right, he copied his memories as well, because Smallville, like much sci-fi, they don't understand how cloning works. It's like, no. If you take someone's DNA, you're not going to have their memories.
No. Memories, you can't actually duplicate those.
No. You know, that's a problem for Lex as well in the show. So anyway.
Exactly. It comes up later.
It's not just Smallville, though. So many other sci-fi things misunderstand the cloning. But you know, Smallville consistently does that. They consistently do it wrong.
In a way, yeah, exactly. It's like, those are just the rules of this universe, and we just have to roll with it.
On Earth 167, that's how cloning works. So there you go. But yeah, so we find out that he's like, what did you do? He's like, I took some of your DNA, but I know everything. Yeah, because he's basically taunting him, right? And he's like, I know your deepest thoughts. And he's like, you don't think about me. And he's like, yeah, I do. I know everything you know, and you wasted your life. I'm going to stop talking like that. But that's how.
No, keep doing it. The whole podcast.
He's like, when I'm living your life, I will make the same mistake, right? So he's going to take over his life, right? That's his objective. And so, you know what? To this season's credit, that's his purpose. And when he comes back later, spoilers, that's exactly what he does. So.
Yep. To horrifying effect.
Right. Oh, yikes. Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that down the road. So what do you think about the Bizarro effects with his face? With the
So obviously, I mean, that's a nod to the comics, where he's like gray in the comics. He's not like, I don't know, the weird like stoniness, the sort of like fractured thing feels new. But I don't mind that's sort of the way that they show that, is that it only happens when he's in the sun, and that's how the sun weakens, or it's like proof that the sun weakens him the same way the sun strengthens Clark. You know, obviously every time we bring in a character from the comics, Smallville does something wacky with it. To me, that sort of makes sense, and I can roll with it. It's like, no problem.
And, you know, they didn't have the budget to have that the entire time.
Also, as you say, like, half of his goal here is to, like, convince people he's Clark. So if it were happening all the time, it wouldn't actually work narratively anyway.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, they got really lucky there. It all kind of folded together.
Yeah, I do feel like it was luck. It was definitely not that.
Oh,
well,
yeah. They didn't plan that out that way, right? But, you know, Clark says, like, there's people back there. I got to go save them. And that kind of establishes that he cares about people. And so nice to see Superman caring about saving people.
I know. And that is one of my favorite saves of the entire series.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. So right. So he punches Bizarro off into a power line or something, gets him out of there. We see some more. They're really subtle about the sunbeams, right? They start putting them in there, like, oh, okay. So they're planting those seeds. So when he gets rid of Bizarro, he runs over, and the dad, the son, and the dog that are fishing, that there's this just flooding toward them, right? And then Clark speeds in and uses his heat vision to make it steam. That's so incredible.
It's so cool. And, you know, I feel like I wish that Smallville did this more often, where Clark uses his powers in more creative ways, because I feel like you see a lot of the kind of same saves over and over again, where it's just, he's fast, he's strong, you know. I love this because it's like, it's quick thinking, like how he couldn't be fast enough to actually whoosh them out of there, because there is no out of there. Like, that entire valley is flooded. Like, that's just, you know. Instead, he just, I mean, who knows what this did to like the environment or whatever, but just, you know, heat visions all of that water into steam. I like the detail of the kid just being like red-faced and sweaty, because that would happen. Right. You know? And I think that the kid and the dad really sell it too, because they both seem so terrified and then so relieved.
Yeah, and you know, you get a kid and a dog in danger. Like, oh man, exactly. So now the stakes are doubled now. Right? Yes. Of course, so you know, we have a tally board here on the podcast. We got a +1 for blue shirt, red jacket, because Clark's wearing his costume he was last week. And we got a +1 for knockout to keep Clark secret, because that dad just falls over to the rocks.
And no one's going to listen to that kid.
No, he's like, oh, there was a guy and he came. Like, sure, son, yeah.
Sure.
But there's something about, and you know, season 4, the same thing, the meteor shower and Clark saves the kid, right? There's something about Superman saving animals and children, right? Well, it's saving animals and children, period. But Superman is just so uplifting about it. And like that one, this is one of my favorite saves as well. So, because the kid's like, wow. And then we get a great moment where Clark gives him the nod, and we get that almost Superman theme. They're not quite there yet.
Yeah, But they're really building to it.
It's over the course of this episode, they at the end, they settle into what will become the Blur theme for the rest of the show. I'm like, da, 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 da. And anyway, so they're easing into it.
And as you say, it's a really good contrast to Bizarro, because Bizarro is soon actually saved by someone who, like, stops and checks in on him. And then he just kills the dude. Right. So it's like instantly, sorry to jump ahead, but it's just like instantly illustrating who we're dealing with here versus it's like this is the actual opposite of Clark. Like Clark is, you know, in the middle of a fight for his life and his friends are dying and he still takes time to save this kid. Mm-hmm. Whereas Bizarro is actually this nice guy's like checking on him and asking if he's okay. And he's like, I'm just going to kill you for fun.
Just for fun. Yeah. Really? And you know, that's a great point, because I thought that was a little, frivolous or to do or whatever the word is to do. But you're right. That's a perfect example of why they're opposite. Because as you said, someone checked on him and he killed him and Clark went and saved other people. So
yeah,
again, poetry, it rhymes. But yeah, we get that. And then we cut the opening credits and we got new opening credits for season 7. It was always fun, as we mentioned a little earlier, the new opening credits, Mike Rose, Mom Second. It's always fun to get new stuff in the opening credits. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of new stuff in here, right? We get a lot of stuff from season 6, the explosions and Nemesis, but you know, the couple of great ones in here. Well, Lex's footage is him like walking through 33.1, you know, and Lana's doing her, you know, she has like a gun in hers. It's like, it's going to be a hardcore season for Lana. Chloe has some shots from season 6 as well. Everybody has really updated footage, and it's great. And so those are all your characters that were there. Lionel, we have a shot of him from Phantom, which is weird because he was like clean shaven almost, but I'm like, all right, whatever.
I know, that's a little bit weird.
It is weird. I guess they just were like, well, that's the most recent episode. Let's update it. But then we get two additions. We get Jimmy Olsen. Well, Henry James Olsen. But as we knew him back then, Jimmy Olsen, Aaron Ashmore, he did his Erica Durant's contract where he was like, okay, I'm going to be a guest star. And then you're going to promote me to the opening credits the next season. So he's here.
Yay.
And then Laura Vanderroot is here. And it's so weird. And I guess the only other time it happens every season, actually, now that I think about it from now on. But it's so weird, except for season 10, where there's like no main characters. It's so weird where they introduce a character like in the opening credits that you haven't seen yet. You're like, it's like Laura Vanderroot. I'm like, who? What? Who is this? Who are these scenes?
I think actually the only other time it happened was Jensen Ackles, right?
It was Jensen Ackles, right? And then it was Laura Vanderroot here. And then moving forward, it's Sam Witwer. In season 8. And then it's your friend Callum Blue. Season 9, right? Tess as well. Season 8, you had Tess and Sam right?
Yeah, right.
Cassidy Freeman.
Right.
So.
I guess, yeah. Up until now, it had only been Jensen.
Right, up until now,
right.
No, you're
just
right.
Keep doing it.
But I'm like, you know, at least with Justin Hartley, I mean, okay, I know he is. But it's just like, what are these scenes? Who is it? Why is she in the barn? Who are you? Anyway, it's very like kind of takes you out of it. And then they put this you know, one of these money shots, right? If we're doing like the Superman pose on top of the water tower and taking off.
Yeah,
I'm like, what is that?
Episode, yeah.
It's from this episode. So, anyway, so fun to get the new opening credits. We come back and Lex is drowning. Is it just me or his last words, Lana? I felt like they were, but maybe that's just me.
I have not noticed that, but I could believe it because he is obsessed.
He is, yes, down bad, as the kids say. But he's drowning there and he's trying to fight, but it's like, he's not going to, no, Clark's not going to come rip the roof off this time, right? But right. Who is his cousin's there?
And she's in like this sort of white, flowy, angelic, like it's the same thing that kind of Raya wears and whatever season that is, you know, it's like clearly like Krypton garb, just looking like a total angel. And, you know, I love Michael Rosenbaum and think he's a very handsome man, but he doesn't look as good underwater as Laura Vanderroot.
No. She literally does look angelic. He looks very
much.
He looks
incredible.
Like we would. We're drowning, right?
Exactly. It's like, get him out of there, you guys.
But it is, it's a very, it's an, like we were joking about, poetry at rhymes, right? It's what happened to Clark and Lex in the first the premiere episode of the show. And this time he sees her and she's floating there and he literally thinks she's an angel, and who wouldn't? Because she even looks that way. It's just really on brand. And in The Companion, Rosemom had this to say about Kara saving him. Quote, "It's typical, isn't it? Everything comes back around again. In the pilot episode, Lex is saved by Clark. And now, 6 years later, he's saved by Clark's cousin. And there's water involved, as I almost drowned in a car." It's very symbolic. So, and then one of the writers of the episode, Todd Slavkin, says, "You can never go wrong with doing a throwback to the pilot. There was an irony that both members of the House of El will be destined to save Lex at first, but I think Lex probably should have learned back then that he should stay away from large bodies of water." So, There you have it. And that's the thing, right? I'm like, hey, if you know, a Superman and Supergirl, you know, they save Lex Luthor and look at all the problems it caused, right? But, you know, you don't get to choose who to save.
And, of course, the rest of the season has Lex, like, just fully preoccupied by Kara the same way he was after Clark saved him. It's like, saving Lex is actually not good for the House of L.
No, it's a terrible, terrible. And, you know, and there is... there's a precedent for that in the comic books. You know, Lex Luthor and Supergirl, totally. Well, different versions of Supergirl have interesting relationships with him over the years. So there's definite precedent to lean into the Lex Supergirl thing. So that was cool. So then, you know, we get the scene where you were talking about Bizarro. He's impaled by this power line. And you know, I'm glad you framed it the way you did, because I thought it was just like, why is this here? But now I'm like, okay, this is to really exemplify their differences. And setting a guy on fire, I'm like, it's pretty visceral for Smallville, setting a guy on fire like that.
I know. And it's sad, too. I mean, it always bums me out, these sort of like one-offs. You show up for 5 seconds or like, you know, it's like the guy at the bowling alley and he's just taking out the trash and they shoot him. Like, I was like, well, that poor guy.
What's that guy's story?
Just doing his job. Yeah, exactly.
So then we see Lois at the dam, Reeves Dam, reference to George Reeves. Yeah, so not Christopher Reeve. George
Reeves.
Reeves
Dam.
That's right.
Exactly. Or there'd be an apostrophe if it were Reeves Dam.
That's true. I haven't seen it in text. Maybe it's for Christopher Reeve after all. We don't know.
Say, yeah.
So we see, you know, we have that huge superpowered army we teased for Lex Luthor, right? And we even in the previously on Smallville, they're like, here they are, right? And they're all, and you know, Lois sees them all floating in the water. They're all dead. It's all over. So we took care of that. I was really hoping for that big Justice League versus Lex Luthor superpowered army, but we didn't get that. So
they just drown.
They just really drown them all.
I feel like in season 7 they were just like, we don't really have the bandwidth to deal with that. So let's just drown them.
Who is that guy? The green one? We can get him back for one episode, but that's all we can do. So anyway.
Exactly.
So yeah, but that closes that plot line. And you know, if you wonder what happened to the little boy who was possessed by the Phantom. Yeah, creepy little demon child, the Omen coming out there, right? He's not dead from being possessed by the Phantom. Okay, sure. I thought the Phantom killed people when it possessed him, but I'm glad the kid
didn't.
That's
what they told us, but I think they felt really bad about doing that.
They're like,
to that small Canadian
kid too. Yeah, the old man we killed, no problem. They left the kid. So anyway, so he's there. Now, you know, Lois has to get him and Chloe's body out of there. Clark goes back and he's looking around for Lionel, but he just finds a shoe. And then we do see what happened to Lionel, and he's floating around in the debris. And John Glover went off to do a play or something, so they wrote him out for a few episodes. And I don't know if they were trying to hide who did this or they just didn't know yet, but like, the fact that someone was wearing a trench coat and gloves shows me they had no idea who it was going to be.
And boots, like, that's my suspicion as well. They're just like, we need to hide this person's form because we don't know who or what it will be. So we'll figure that out later.
Yeah. So we'll see him basically in the Misery situation.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with that movie, but he finds himself in a log cabin in a bear trap, and I look forward
with
to John Glover's return. Yeah. So anyway, back to Lois, right? She's trying to get out of there, and the kid's like, is she dead? About Chloe. And Lois's like, no, she's just asleep. I'm like, no, she's dead. Chloe, I mean, I guess she's technically not dead yet, but she's going
to
die.
Not yet. She's about to be.
You know, speaking of George Reeves, Reeves Dam, I thought Clark's entrance here was very George Reeves-esque, because whenever I think about Superman jumping through a wall, I think about him watching Nick at Night when I was a kid. And this is what I saw, right? And Lois is like screaming for help. And then the wall just collapses. And I guess Clark punched it or something. I don't know. She's like, how did you do that? He's like, well, it's unstable around here. I'm lucky it collapsed. I'm like, that's a very good cover. That's a very good cover.
I know. Sometimes he's better than others. Sometimes he's like, I don't know, just lucky, I guess. And it's like, that's not an
just
answer.
Like, I don't know how that happened. Yeah, so. But he got lucky there. And they're teasing the blur thing. It's not quite there yet, but it's like, da, 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 da. There's like horns or synthetic horns, right? We're getting there. But he's going to get all of them out of there to the hospital. So then we get Bizarro back at the Kent farm. And remember, he has all Clark's memories. So I guess that's why he went and found the kryptonite they always keep everywhere, right?
Yeah, and the iron box.
Yeah. And, you know, we get a shirtless Tom Welling scene. You know, so everybody, there you are.
Woohoo! In my Smallville drinking game that my husband and I play, you drink twice for shirtless Tom Welling.
You know, we don't have a shirtless Clark, but we do have a shirtless Oliver Tally on the podcast.
That's a lot.
I mean, he's only been a few episodes so far.
He makes him shirtless into the credits.
So when he comes back, that's really going to go up on the board. But yeah, we have so it was established a little bit obviously, in Phantom, that how the kryptonite, and that's a great reversal, right? Because kryptonite wouldn't work on Mazzaro if he's truly the opposite, that would power him up, and that's exactly what happens.
Yes.
So then we lose our, and I thought it was a cool nod to the comics that when Mazzaro first happened, he had the purple shirt and the blue jacket, and so I'm like, okay, because in the comics, some versions they get kind of purplish here. He rips all that stuff off, but he knows enough. He knows the color scheme of the show because he puts on the exactly. He puts on the red shirt, puts on the blue
navy
jacket.
And maroon. Well, it's like slightly, yeah, it's like slightly darker, much like his voice is slightly darker.
Darken the colors and the voice. So there exactly. you go.
But Lex, he wakes up on the shore, and he looks up, and to me, I immediately thought of Supergirl, the CW CBS Supergirl, of like the shot of Superman, like before they cast him, they have the head and the sun behind him, and there's a shadow. That's what Lex sees when he sees Kara, right?
Totally.
It's different because before, like, you know, he was passed out and stuff for Clark, but this time around, he sees her in the water. He sees her here. She's kind of like, I guess she just saw a guy in trouble and saved him. You know, spoilers, her ship came out of the dam, and then I'm like, okay, I'll give that to you, show. That's some shady retcon, but
quite a coincidence.
Season 7 will do much worse retconning over the course of this season.
Oh my
so.
God, Veritas. Oh,
we're going to get a shot of that window here. And my friends, I'm here to tell you that the Veritas symbol is still not in the window.
I've also checked before.
But then he not only does he see Supergirl who had saved him, he sees her fly off. it's like, come on.
Which is major.
That's huge.
It's major for us, too. I mean, that's like not just huge for Lex, but for viewers. You're like, here is a like an L who's flying.
Clark, you need to get on that, as Chloe tells him later in the episode.
Exactly.
But then hospital visit plus one, because Lois and Chloe and Clark have now brought everybody to the hospital. So a hospital visit plus one for Chloe, because she is being worked on. And Lois tells Clark what happened. And I think, you know, Clark kind of figures out that this must have been Chloe's meteor power, right? Because Lois is like, I got stabbed, right. And Mike's scar's gone. And Clark's like, oh, I don't know. Lex was doing some experiments down there. Maybe that's what happened. So he's good with the lies.
Which is a nice cover.
He's learning six years in. Right. He finally knows how to cover himself. But yeah, she's totally healed, right? And so let me ask you this. What is your take on Chloe having powers? Because it's like blink and you miss it in the grand scheme of the show.
I know. It's really weird. And that they, you know, eventually transfer that for like her like Brainiac stuff. I feel like they really don't know what to do with Chloe at this point. Like, I think they didn't want to just keep her being a sidekick, but I think she's an amazing sidekick who's also a genius. It's sort of how I feel about Willow too, where I'm like, why couldn't it ever just be that like her superpower is that she's freaking brilliant and really great at computers? Like, that's important. Like, that's a superpower. But yeah, I'm not a fan of it. I mean, I think the show handles it well, and I love Gemini. Is one of my favorite season 7 episodes where Jimmy finds out about it. But it's just, I don't know. I mean, and the way she like struggles with it, I mean, it does fit with the continuity of the show because she has had so much like access to kryptonite. And so, you know, that makes sense. But it's really not my favorite for the character.
Yeah, it's interesting how they picked such a big deal about it about the end of season 6. And then, of course, it comes into play here. And then it doesn't come into play at all until Odyssey.
Yeah, well, she spends all of season 7 like fighting against it. And so that's kind of like, I guess, an arc for her. But like plot-wise, no, it does not matter at all.
Yeah, like if you were like, obviously other story stuff aside, right? But if you're watching the show and you like didn't watch between like middle season 6 and middle of season 8, you would have never known that Chloe was a meteor freak. that's completely
exactly, and it'd be
different.
Fine. It'd be completely fine. Like, it wouldn't matter.
I don't. When I think about Smallville, I'm like, oh, that's right. That was the thing. Like, it doesn't even like occur to me that she was a meteor freak for a while because of how they handled it. So odd. But anyway, this is the big reason why she was a meteor freak, because she resurrected Lois. But Lois is going to go to the mansion and go after Dr. Evil, she calls Lex, because we all love a good Austin that. Powers reference, right? It's good. And then Lois is like, maybe Lana can help me. Like, ooh, no, she can't.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. So that's what I was about to say. I actually really love that scene between Clark and Lois, because Lois is like, I can't hear about your relationship problems right now, Clark. Like, my cousin is dying. I can't deal with this. And he's just like, he's so sweet. And he's just like, okay, she can't handle this news right now. There's so many really beautiful emotional moments with Clark about Lana in this episode. He like almost never actually deals with it. You just see him quietly suffering the entire episode, which is really strong performance on his part, because it's not actually on the page. Like, they don't actually talk about the way Clark would be feeling about Lana having died. like in the script at all. It's just Tom Welling constantly giving these moments like a lot of grief, and but he doesn't have time to dwell on it because like it's on fire and he's got
to
save it.
Yeah, I mean, credit to Tom, right? He's come a long way as an actor. I mean, I love Welling. I love him as Clark. But, you know, it took him a couple of years to kind of really settle in what he was doing. But he really does emote really well in this episode because he thinks, like, everybody dies, right? He thought Chloe was dead. Oh, it's like, man, oh, my
Chloe
goodness.
Chloe scene in a minute. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But no, you know, that's a very mature thing Clark to be like, okay, well, let's go on your way. I'll tell you about Lana dying later on. But then we get Lex, and I can only assume that his minions have scooped him up and put him in the office of Luther Corp, right? Because he's in his office just sitting there thinking about, like, he's got his wedding ring he's caressing because he's thinking about how he almost died, how Lana's apparently dead. He's got a lot on his mind. And then not Mercy Graves, as I refer to her this season, because this is actually recurring henchwoman or, you know, whoever you want to call her this Gina. Season. Gina. We don't find her name out until, like, her last episode, do we?
No, and I do not care for her at all. No. Like, I don't find her compelling. I just don't like her.
Well, it's just like, okay, we need someone for Lex to talk to and handle some stuff for him. And they did, at the end of season six, there was that Bartlett character who was there for a few episodes in a row.
I liked him, yeah.
And then they kill him off. And I'm like, okay, I guess they're like, oh, this is good. Let's have Lex have somebody around he can delegate things to. And I'm like, all right.
He can monologue to, yeah.
But I'll say, back in the day, we all thought this was going to be Mercy Graves, right? Because this is pre-test.
So funny, yeah.
You know, I'm like, who else would this be, right? Had they had the foresight to, like, all right, let's introduce Tess, and obviously this character wouldn't have died. That would have been such a better transition.
Had this been Cassidy Freeman, I would have been much more interested in
amazing, right? But hey, he's wanted for murder. And they're like, hey, we need to get you on this helicopter. We can get you out of UF jurisdiction in a couple hours. He's like, no, I'm turning myself in. Because he feels like he was saved by an angel, and he was, you know, saved for a reason. And so he's going to face his demons, as he says later on. So, hey, good on Lex Luthor for... Well, okay, he didn't kill Lana. She actually set him up for that, so...
Totally. He did slap her, so this is, like, my least favorite Lex. Mm. Like, I'm, like, really mad at Lex right
this
now.
This is, like, the low point of Lex as a character, period. Like, as 100%, a, like, liking him, and then as of, you know, his descent into villainy, no doubt. But he's gonna turn himself in. What a stand-up guy he's become, right? Thinking about facing the consequences of his actions. But then we have what is the most pointless scene of the episode, in my opinion. You might tell me what you think about this scene, but Lois has gone to go confront Lex at the mansion, but everybody's gone because they've got scooped him off to try to get him out of the country. So, okay, I will buy the fact she could get in there because no one else is there, right? Oh, by the way, great shot of the window.
Yeah.
No Veritas symbol. That is one of my favorite Lucas Luthor and the Veritas window are my, like, two favorite things to complain about. I'm like, where is this guy? Where is Lucas Luthor? But anyway.
Seriously.
Not even a line of dialogue. You've watched the show dozens of times. They never address this, right?
Nope. Never
good.
Once.
Sometimes I think, did I forget? I'm like, no, they're not even a line of dialogue. But anyway, I guess Paul Wachowski was off... doing Vampire Diaries, so he would have been great to bring in for season 8, right?
Yeah, totally. But
Paul Wesley.
Now.
Yeah.
Yes.
He had a very different name when he appeared on Smallville. But anyway,
that's so, like, he had the same eyebrows.
Oh, man. So Lois is, like, looking for Lex, and then Bizarro shows up. And he's like, hey. Well, he doesn't use the voice. Excuse me. He's like, hey.
He's being Clark now. Yeah.
Right. He's being Clark. And then he's, like, hitting on her and grabs her ass. And I'm like, why is this here? I mean, to set up a joke later? Is that the only reason it's here, Meredith?
Well, I don't care for it. But I do remember that Bizarro had a crush on Lois in the comics. So I think it's a nod to that. I think it's just kind of a shoddily done, like, messy and useless nod to that.
And, well, he has a serious crush on Lana when he comes back, so...
Ugh, I really hate that entire arc so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, it's like, how could... I keep doing the Bizarro voice. It's like, he's like, how could you have missed this right in front of his face? Like, oh, you get it, guys? Clark and Lois are supposed to be together. Like, that's what they're going for this scene, but you remove this scene, nothing changes, and then you just remove the payoff joke at the end. I'm like, so
exactly.
I just... Definitely taking this out. Like, they were trying to be clever and funny. I didn't like it, and it was really contrived anyway. They both encountered themselves there, but it did confirm to me that they still didn't know that they were going to do Veritas at the beginning of season 7. Because if they had, they would have changed out that window. Am I right?
Exactly, right.
I mean, that blew my mind when I think somebody told me this too. They're like, it's not even there all of season 7. I was like, are you serious? I had always assumed, right? They didn't. But anyway. So then we get to Chloe. She's in surgery, and they're, you know, have some very erratic, you know, life signs from her.
talking about a transition period for the show, we've had so many familiar faces that have been doctors over the last few years. None of them are here. None of them are here. And I was looking for those same, like, Rika Sharma.
You know, Scanlan. Yeah. Or the Indian lady doctor. We call her Dr. Don't Give a F***. Because every scene with her is her just walking in and being like, anyway, your son's dead, and then just walking out.
I love Rika Sharma. She went on to be on Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek Discovery.
She's awesome. I love her so much. I think she's amazing. Like,
she's such a random actress to be in Smallville in those roles, though, right?
Yeah, she's so cool. But yeah, we don't find that her character gives an F. So.
No, you know, now that I think about her, I do think every time she appears is to tell you that somebody died.
Always. And with, like, no emotion. She's like,
I'm
anyway,
so sorry.
Martha lost the baby. I gotta go.
I remember her, like, now you say that, I distinctly remember her such deadpan, like, I'm so sorry. Then walks off.
It's like, are you, though? I don't feel like you are.
Not work on your bedside manner, right? But, but hey, we miss a great deadpan delivery from here because she's not here to tell us that Chloe died.
And actually, I think it's a nurse, not a doctor, who gives that information to Clark. Does that
much
with
better
great
performance
warmth
than Rika Sharma would have given us. Oh man, but we have a plus one for main character death because now Chloe is dead. They pronounced her dead, so she's dead. Doesn't matter if they come back to life; they died, so that's what counts.
Yep.
Then she wakes up in the morgue.
I do think that that's another really great performance from Tom Welling. The scene where, I mean, and they don't make it last too long, because all of us really know that Chloe's coming back at this point. But just the way, I mean, just he just looks so overwhelmed with grief. Like he looks, he's like literally about to pass out. We've never seen him that affected by anything. And it's, you know, of course, it's the weight of Lana and Chloe all at once. He's just, I mean, he looks like he's doubled over. And then he hears Chloe calling for him. I love that scene.
I got like Superman the movie vibes at the end, right? Where Lois is dead and Christopher Reeve just gets overwhelmed with the emotion, right? I felt I saw that in him there. Because, I mean, you're right. It's a culmination of everything that's happened, right? I mean, Lana is dead. Chloe just died. And then in addition to that, right? He doesn't know where Lionel is. His mom is gone. I mean, who knows what's going on?
He's got this, like, bizarro character to deal
with.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a dark point of his life. And so, Welling really pulls off the just overwhelm with emotion stuff. And then they do this 360 around him. And I guess...
Yeah.
I guess he just decides to listen. I'm not sure what triggers this exactly, but because he turns on the super hearing.
I mean, this has happened before too. I think this is like canon where if someone he loves calls for help, he's like just so in tune to that he can like actually hear it even if he's not trying to. You know what I mean?
So not everyone has the little signal caller they have on Superman and Lois, the little Jimmy Olsen watch.
Not quite that, but he's like he's used to Chloe being like Clark, so his like ears are tuned to it, you know.
Yeah, so he's tuned into her because she's woken up in a morgue, and what a horrible thing to have experienced, right? I mean, that's like worst nightmare situation, right? If you wake up in a morgue, right? Oh, I guess a grave would be worse because a morgue, there's at least someone can find you in there. So.
Yeah, you don't have to dig yourself out.
You don't have to dig yourself
out.
The
toe tag is really brutal.
Oh my
that.
Gosh. All right. So he hears her like, help, help, help. And he pulls her out of the morgue and she's like, why am I in a morgue? Why am I in a morgue? I'm like, that, you know what? That would be my question as well. But then, she's like, was I dead? He's like, well, you're not now.
I know, he's like, don't worry about it, don't worry about it.
But you're right, the toe tag is such a creepy detail, right? Because like, you were dead.
They tagged you.
Yeah. So, Clark tries to get her to just be like, hey, so what happened here? Like, I think he's like, all right, this is your power came out, right? But they can't, like, they're not addressing it because she, like you said, she spent this whole season trying to deny it and all this stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But then she goes and puts like a coat on to sneak out of there. And she finds her chart, which I guess she steals and burns later. So that means that she never died. Like, shouldn't there be questions here?
I just have a quick aside to that. It drives me crazy that she doesn't keep it to use it. Like, Chloe's smart. Like, there's all sorts of ways that a death certificate could come in handy. She shouldn't have burned it. Like, I know it's symbolic, but it's like, hang on to it. Who knows if you need to later, when she does actually assume a new identity, having a death certificate for Chloe would have been very useful, you know?
Yeah, and that would explain why, like, in the future, the Legions are like, we've never heard of Chloe Sullivan.
Exactly, which is what I thought this is where this was going, but apparently not.
Well, I mean, to your point, they just didn't know what to do with Chloe because, like, you know, originally you're like, I mean, I was on the people like, early season, like, well, maybe she'll be Lois Lane, right? I mean, that was because they were...
I was like, you can't spell Chloe Sullivan without Lois Lane. The letters are in her name. It's like, well, down the rabbit hole.
It would have been such a cool twist and perfect, but then, like, okay, they brought in the real Lois, but then they, like, kept Chloe doing Lois things and Lois not doing Lois things.
I know.
Then I'm like, and then the ultimate, like, whiplash, season 6, they kill Lois...
And then Chloe, I'm like, wait a minute, are you doing it? And they did, and now here we are. But I think, and then they gave her, like, her mom had the, oh, I'm going to turn crazy like my mom. But then, no, my mom was a meteor freak. Oh, but now I'm Brainiac, and now I never existed.
The,
and it's like,
the retcon with her mom drives me crazy, too. Just like, at one point, she's blonde, and then she's brunette. I mean, because she's, you know, obviously Linda Carter.
Linda Carter, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's like, there's so many stories that Chloe tells when she was a kid about how her mom left, and then
all
it's like
retconned.
Totally different. Oh, it drives me so bad.
I was really hard on that episode because just, you know, as you know, being steeped in Smallville lore as you are, it's very frustrating to be like,
it's
I just
so
watched this for
None
6 years, and yeah. you told me that...
I have such beef with that episode, which sucks because you want to be excited when Linda Carter visits Smallville, you know?
Well, you know, and then speaking of, right, it made me think of something else. When Clark was trying to, like, what happened? Where's Chloe Sullivan, right? They're like, I'm sorry, sir. We can't tell anyone except her next of kin. I was like, well, what about calling her dad, who we forgot existed?
How about the fact that they don't even mention Gabe for her wedding? When she asked Clark to walk her down the aisle, I'm like, could you not just say, like, you know, my dad's overseas on this important project. Just throw us a bone here, people. Poor Gabe. Like,
one line of dialogue. I mean, for Lois and Clark's wedding, right? They say, oh, the
yeah,
general
they
is
that.
Busy. I'm
they
like,
totally
okay.
They totally do that for Sam, and I appreciate that. I'm like, oh, and it makes sense, because, like, the world's falling apart. Sam does need to attend to that.
Exactly. So I just, like, the fact that they just forgot Gabe Sullivan existed.
I'm not a fan of that. I like Gabe.
He became Lucas Luther. You know, he just became, exactly. Like, it's so synonymous. So anyway, I'm like, next of kin is not her cousin. It is her dad. But anyway.
Yeah.
There
exactly.
It is. So speaking of, like, Chloe's chart, which she finds and takes, right? Underneath her chart... is Lana's charge. So that's a little contrived, isn't it?
It's
like
it's a busy day in the Smallville morgue.
That is how Chloe finds out that Lana is dead, right? And that ties into, like, oh, they actually had a body. Ooh, anyway.
Right, exactly. So it's more sort of evidence for us that they immediately blow, even actually before that, as you say.
Bottle 503.
Exactly. But I think it's a really beautiful performance by Allison Mack in that moment, and also Tom Walling. And I have such beef with the fact that, I mean, it's a deleted scene that, as a person who owns the discs, I'm sure you've seen, but that in the actual aired part of Smallville season 7, you never see Chloe finding out that Lana's alive. That's a deleted scene. Like, they show her grieving so, like, you know, effectively throughout this episode. And then they never show the episode, or they never aired the scene where she actually finds out that that's not true and her best friend is alive. It drives me crazy. It really makes me mad. I get so mad about that.
Like poetry, it rhymes, right? Because when Chloe died in season 3, there's a deleted scene when Lana finds out she's not dead. I'm
know,
like, come
that's
on.
Bad poetry. I don't care for that poetry. It's like, I don't want it to rhyme that they keep leaving out these really important scenes where these best friends find out that each other's okay.
It's tough. You know, I wish they would have been ahead of the game, and it's not their fault, right? But, like, you know what Superman and Lois does now, right? They incorporate deleted scenes into the episode that shows online on CW.com. And then, presumably, when the Blu-rays come out, it'll be the extended version. So these scenes will be canon, so to speak.
Exactly. So, like, I love that I've seen those scenes. And mm-hmm. I do think the deleted scenes on the Smallville discs, anyone who's listening, you should absolutely buy it. It's worth it. The commentary is also incredible. All the special features are so good. You know, they're really well produced and stuff. Like, it's not like watching, you know, they're color corrected and they fix the sound and all that. So, you know, I love the deleted scenes, but I want them to be canon, as you say. And that's not canon. That drives me crazy.
Absolutely. So, speaking of Lana's corpse, we get Lex in prison talking to his lawyer, and they're playing this recording. Obviously, Lana had set all this up to frame Lex for murder, because...
So, that's the reason I think that you're like, what a stand-up guy. No, he already knew he was framed for murder, and he's like, oh, I'm going to see where this goes, because I know that he's very intrigued. He always loves it when Lana gets one over on him. And so he's just kind of playing along with her plan, because he's compelled by it. That's
okay.
My theory.
Interesting. So, yeah, because they have this audio recording of their confrontation at the end of Phantom, you know, where she says, Clark means more to me than you ever will, and he hits her, and then she's like, what are you going to do, kill me? And so she specifically said that to set up him for murder.
That's the last time you'll ever touch me.
It's dark.
It's real dark.
Later on, right, is when he goes to find her, right, he's obsessively listening to it. But that's what Lex does, right? It's very in character for him to do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's talking to his lawyer. He's like, I don't care about any of that stuff about the murder, right? I want to know about Model 503. Like, ooh, what is Model 503?
So creepy.
Talking about it right after the scene where we talked about Lana's corpse. So we don't know. Ooh. We don't know. But he tells his lawyer he wasn't miraculously saved to run away from my demons. And then Bizarro's like, be careful what you wish for. And then he rips off the, it's a really cool shot of, you know, ripping the bars off the door. And then just to show you how evil Bizarro is, he Terminators this guy. He reaches in and just throws his heart. You hear the sound effect. It's like, I'm like, oh my God, it's very gross.
I'm less upset about that than I am about the Good Samaritan, because I'm like, if this guy's a, like, murderer defense attorney for a billionaire, like, he probably deserves to die.
Doesn't look good, Mr. Luther. Get the best spin team on it. So, but then again, so Bizarro, I mean, Lex knows that this is Bizarro at this point. He's like, he took Clark's body. He's like, well, he's still out there. Just took a few cells. And, you know, if I were Lex, I'd be like, how is Clark not dead? I mean, he asks him later, too, but basically Bizarro wants more kryptonite. And he wants Lex to help him find it because he knows that makes him powerful. And he's like, I'll never help you kill Clark, which is interesting. I thought you don't. I mean, the Lex and Clark thing is, Lex is just, I don't know. Like, if I were him, I'd consider it. I'd be like, all right.
Yeah, especially when he's like, why not align yourself with, you know, a Clark Kent who wants to work with you rather than a, what is it?
Yeah.
Do you have the line?
Oh, yeah, he's just like, why protect a Clark who hates you when you could, you know, it's what you've always wanted, right? Because, you know, he's always, because Clark, he has his memories. He knows Lex has always wanted to team up with Clark and all these things. And so, yeah, I don't know. I guess Lex was going to always double cross him. I guess that was part of the plan here.
Definitely. And I also think that what Lex finds most interesting about Clark is his goodness. So a bad version of Clark is not actually that interesting to him.
So he's, you know, going to break him out of prison. It is nice that Lex gets to team up with these supervillains. You know, he gets to team up with Bizarro. He's teamed up with Brainiac in the past. Zod became him. So, like, there's lots of Lex, you know, being, you know,
yeah,
connected to these villains. But
and Darkseid.
Oh, God. And Darkseid, of course, who resurrects him via Lionel. Yeah. So we get to Chloe mourning Lana's death in their apartment. We see her watching some videos, or should I say we hear her watching some videos, because they're like, all right, Kristen, why don't you come in here? We can record some audio. And so they didn't actually have to film something new. But it's, I mean, that's what you would do, right? If like a friend of yours died, I think they handle everyone grappling with Lana's death very well in this episode.
I think they definitely do. They give it a lot of weight.
So, you know, Chloe and Clark kind of embrace, and, you know, they're sad about it. Like, hey, there's this Bizarro's out there right now. We got to go to work. She actually calls him Bizarro Clark. So we have episode title, an episode plus one, right? But yes, this is the only, yes, he's referred to as Bizarro, which is like a very small, like, Chloe is the one who always like Brainiac this, and, you know, she's the one naming all the supervillains. She's the Cisco Ramon of Smallville before there was Cisco, yes. Right? So they pretty much deduce what he might be up to. And while they're talking, Clark's like, I guess it's not like I can just fly after him. And she's like, this guy can fly? Clark, you got to get on that. You know, that's a great line. And true, I mean, literally everyone can fly. So I guess for him, it's literally a mental block for him.
Yeah.
Because everybody else who shows up on Earth for 5 seconds who has these powers can fly all around. But they deduce that, like, okay, Oliver Queen, remember him? He's still part of the show, guys. Like, Oliver's team, 33.1 and Kryptonite. That's how they know that Lex had these shipments. I'm like, all right, keep name dropping Oliver. It would be so funny if he never came back. I wonder what they would.
I'd be so mad. It's like, I love,
you know, you keep mentioning this. I know you can't show us, but it is funny. They keep, to their credit, they keep making him part of the show even when he's not there.
Yeah.
But they're like, oh, Lex got all this meteor rock transferred to the Reeves Dam, so that's why Clark's going to go back there, right? Chloe's like, what are you going to do? And he's like, well, I think I might know someone who can help me. And then we have this Martian Manhunter with a hero shot, right? It's John Jones. And he's back from healing out of Earth's atmosphere, right? That's why he was gone, and now he's back. So
I love Phil Morris's Martian Manhunter. He's one of my favorite parts of the entire show. Every time he shows up, I'm like so happy.
I like him too. And, I, you know, he's one of those characters where you think he's there more than he is. Because I was like,
exactly.
Oh, yeah, season like 6. He's in, like you see Martian Manhunter without him, without Phil Morris in the first, and then he had to talk about deleted scenes. There's such a great deleted scene in season 6 where he like explains who he is to Clark in the loft and all this stuff, and it's not in the episode. I'm like, oh,
like, no. I think the reason you think he's in there more is that he always shows up at these really critical junctures.
Yeah.
And so it's like they're always like major scenes when he's there.
Like I never recommend you do this, but some people are like, I only watch like the season premieres and mid-season finales and the season finales. I'm like, okay. But if you did some kind of watch through like that, you think Martian Manhunter was here all the time, Gary, because he's there at all the major.
Series regular.
But I want to know how he contacted him, because usually he just kind of shows up, but whatever, it's fine. So, but they talk about how like humanity is Clark's greatest strength, but it's also his greatest his weakness and how this Bizarro, he was a, you know, a lab experiment who was, he kind of has the Doomsday origin from the comic books.
It's totally Doomsday. Exactly. And also from the show. I mean, it's that same thing where it's like Clark has some sympathy for him because it's like, this is what your life would be if you hadn't been found by Jonathan. And I mean, he, same with Lex. I mean, they kind of hit that theme home several times.
Right. But that he kind of explains to him, like, has no remorse, right? And all this stuff. He's like, how am I supposed to defeat someone with all my powers and none of my weaknesses, right? That's a line they use so many times, I feel like, in, like in the trailers and stuff or Smallville for this.
Oh, yeah. That was definitely the like, hero moment for the trailer.
Right. And Martian Manhunter, he says, something you take for granted every day, the sun. And the sun is interesting with Smallville. Like, they sometimes they kind of talk about it. Like, Perry was a huge episode with the solar flares and all that. But they don't, and with all mediums, they always show him kind of, like, recharging, but it's never, like, they never really lean into that very much, but sometimes they do.
It's not terribly overt, which I sort of like. Like, they don't spell it out, but you do, if you're aware of it and, you know, you do see it happen where you're like, oh, he's like healing a little more quickly because he's in the sun right now, you know.
This Clark can't fly up to the sun and charge up like all the other Superman, but he can at least lay there and stand there and get the rays on his...
Or he can have his buddy, Martian Manhunter, fly right up to the sun exactly, as he does in the season 8 premiere.
That's right. That makes sense. So when did his powers go out, Martian Manhunter? Why did you not just die in space? That's fine. That's fine. It's never, that's next season premiere. We'll talk about it. But anyway. So yeah, basically the sun is going to help Clark defeat Bizarro. Martian Manhunter says, I can help. But this is your battle. I'm like, come on, man. Like, this is... I know Jor-El told you not to help, but, like, this guy could kill me. You know? I mean, this is serious business.
And also in, like kill everybody.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I guess it's the... It's the DCEU mindset of Martian Manhunter. I'm like, well, I'm going to let Superman try to stop him. And then I guess if he doesn't, I'll finally...
Because otherwise, how will he learn?
Right? It's like, come on, man. I understand, like, you got to get tough love and school of hard knocks and all that with these Supermen. But when there are alien forces attacking the
lives
planet,
are at stake.
Yeah, come on. Anyway, that's a consistent character trait of all Martian Manhunters I found through all versions. Right?
So
but anyway.
True.
Bizarro and Lex are at the dam, and Lex is like, it's in there, right? And then... Bizarro goes over to the kryptonite, and then Lex pulls out this big gun out of... I don't know where this came from. This giant, like, super gun. What was that supposed to be? Like, why does that exist? There was no setup for that. He just finds this giant military gun. I'm going to say they made it to use against the super soldiers, maybe, if they went rogue. That's my headcanon there. I just came up with that now.
Tomo Pinnicket, yeah.
And works. I'm very proud of it. So anyway, he pulls out the big gun on Bizarro, right? And he's like... why'd you just copy Clark? Nobody else, you know, he starts shouting at him. And it's interesting because I thought, why is Bizarro even like teasing Lex about Clark's secret? He's trying to use it to get him on his side. And so that's actually pretty smart. He's like, so what's more important, killing me or unraveling the mystery of Clark Kent? Right. So, and then Lex is like he thinks about it for a little bit, and Bizarro's like, wrong answer. Right. And he just breaks the gun and super speeds around him and then knock out the cute Clark secret because he throws Lex and he gets knocked out for Clark to show up.
Yep.
But again, Lex double-crossing the villains and stuff, that's very on brand. I like that. We see more, though. They've been really consistent about, like, the sun rays and the face up to this point. But I feel like they start just like, oh, he's Bizarro. At random times. Because he supercharges up, right? And it's really cool. He gets all the refined kryptonite.
Yeah, so why would he kind of get that fragmenty face when he charges up? That doesn't make sense, actually.
Right, because that's when he's weaker.
Exactly. That goes against all the continuity they have thus far established.
But I think it was just like, it's Bizarro, guys. I'm like, yeah, I know it's Bizarro. I know that.
They're like, we want to put this moment in the trailer.
It's always that same way, right? But anyway.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Clark shows up. He checks on Lex, you know, and... And then, you know, they're going to fight here. And Bizarro's like, you don't deserve this life. I do. I'm like, all right. That's his motivation. I get it. That's not Bizarro at all, by the way. They've completely, it's great. You know, the show, right? Smallville was like teasing cloning and Clark's blood and all this stuff for so many years. And I've talked about this before. And you thought it was going to lead to Bizarro, but no, it was like a random Phantom Zone guy stole his DNA. I'm like, what?
I know.
This Doomsday origin or whatever. But anyway. I like the pseudo-flying Clark does. He leaps really high. There's some cool shots here of him attacking Bizarro, I thought.
And he has another sort of pseudo-flying moment when he's, like, running across the bridge from the dam, and he you know, just sort of runs fast enough over a part where there is no actual bridge. So this is a good episode for, like, Clark kind of getting a step closer to getting on that in terms of flying. He's still not there, but for seasons. But I do think it's a good episode for kind of teasing it.
Subconsciously flying, right?
Exactly. So. When he's not getting his own way about it.
Now, this is very interesting here, because he's so super powered, right, at this point, because he sucked up less kryptonite. Clark is no match for him, right? And so he punches Clark, and Clark's kind of collapsed, and Bizarro starts walking off. And then we see Clark getting up, and they clearly shot this at 60 frames a second to slow it down, but then they used it in real time. I don't really know how you can tell this, right? But if you watch, like, the motion is too smooth. It's like you can put your TV on smooth mode, and and like you see, like, there was something different about it. And then I figured it out. Oh, they shot this in slow motion, and then decided not to use it in slow motion. And it's Clark like getting up, and I'm like, this looks really weird. And that's what it is. That's what it has to be. That's just me and my production knowledge bringing it to that. Like, yeah, I didn't find that trivia anywhere, but that must be what it was. But anyway. Finally, they do the slow motion where we like get the close up of Clark. His scar is healing because he's in the sun, right? And he's like, "Hey, is that all you got?" Right? So then,
I love it. That's a great moment.
I love
great
when moment. He kind of gets into it, right? And like when Superman's confident. Anytime,
yeah. Oh, that's the best. I like it so much. Just a quick like moment from last season six, but like. Whenever he's talking to Lyle, he's like, if I find out you had anything to do with Lana marrying Lex, the gloves will come off. How you like that option?
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah! Absolutely. I love like, it when he's
he
assertive.
Gets like this,
yeah.
I'm so into
because
it.
He has to not be so often. It's like to see, it's really refreshing to see him that way, right?
It is.
But then, you know, Bizarro kind of walks over to him and Clark takes a couple punches. But then he does, I guess he musters up all his strength to do this upper punch, this uppercut, and he flies him up into the sky, and the Martian Manhunter swoops in. And we see Bizarro like kind of breaking apart, and I was like, oh, maybe he's dead. I don't know, because like, you see the kryptonite underneath his skin. It was a very interesting effect they did with that, but that's kind of how I took it. And Martian Manhunter apparently imprisons him on Mars somewhere, if we're to believe Chloe here. And I guess later on in the season too, when he comes back. So
yeah, it's a great like pause on the sort of Bizarro problem, and it's like we'll worry about that again later this season.
But did you find this anticlimactic though?
I didn't, but only because, you know, it's a season premiere. It's like, if this were the season finale, yes, absolutely. But I'm like, oh,
like Doomsday,
back.
Am I right?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean, the season six fight was really good. I thought, you know, that's one of the best fights they probably have on the show. And we get a little bit of fighting. I mean, look, for Smallville, right? This is epic. I mean, we're looking
it's
at it from
really good.
20 years later. Yeah. So
totally. This is, yeah. I mean, this is one of my favorite premieres, honestly.
So, you know, with a little help from his friends, Clark defeats and then we cut back to the Kin house. That Martha's no longer here. She's living in Washington.
First premiere without Anna Tool, RIP.
She is missed. She's definitely missed.
Ugh,
and
terribly.
Clark's listening to a news report on the radio. Again, they're relying heavily on audio this episode, I guess, to save special effects money. Like, we don't have to shoot a news reporter and all that. So.
Well, I think all of it, too, with the, you know, the clip earlier and this, I think maybe they're trying to save the time that you see Lana for, like, the big, in my opinion, very stupid reveal.
I didn't even think
out.
About that. It's more impactful to see her, finally. Oh, yeah. Okay. Because you're right, because exactly. If it was a news report, you see a picture of her and all that.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
Man, I have some words about that, but we're almost there, though. But we get Clark listening to the radio and Alana's death, and Lex has been arrested, and we get all that information, right? Chloe comes in, mentions the sunny side of Mars is where Bizarro has been imprisoned by the Martian Manhunter. I get, you know, they go into Martian Manor for a little more later on in the show, but it's like, at this point, you're like, what is he? Does he live on Mars? What? Like, you don't really.
Where is he?
Where does he exist all the time? But anyway, he's got the Flash pipeline going on Mars, just putting criminals there.
Exactly.
So that's why he puts Dean Cain in a few episodes, apparently. So when he comes on the show, but anyway. But Clark, you know, Clark finally gets introspective here. He finally has time to process Lana's loss, right?
And he does it beautifully. I think, I mean, again, I think Tom Welling always plays Clark as so very like still and stoic, which, as we know, having watched the commentary or seen him when he's playing different versions of Clark, is a choice. Like, people are like, oh, he's so stiff. It's like, no, this is a choice. He's doing a thing, you know? But here he's just, I mean, he's so like vulnerable and like, it's like a really beautiful moment. And then, you know, when he talks to Chloe about how he doesn't think he's any better than Bizarro because he wanted to kill Lex, Chloe's like, well, you didn't, and so you're better. And he said, but I love this moment so much. Ironically, it's like the first time I ever really felt like I understood Lex. You know, love is easy. It's hard, but hate is so clean. And the way he says it, it just, it slays me. I think it is like one of the best deliveries of the entire series for him.
I liked where the conversation went as well, because at first I was like, is it going to be another one of these nature versus nurture conversations, which are good, but we go over that quite a bit.
And he already had it. Yeah, he already had it with Martian Manhunter today.
But to him, like, kind of examine, like, you know, hate and clean, like, that's, I hadn't thought about it that way before seeing this episode, so.
Exactly. And for him, I mean, for him saying that the most he's ever understood Lex was the time that he wanted to kill Lex is just like chilling, you know? I mean, I think that's, and it's actually, I think, kind of what ended up saving Lex is that he's like, oh, this is what it's like to be Lex all the time. And like, I can understand the attraction, but I don't want to be drawn to that, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. So then Lois comes in and we get a hilarious payoff to our scene from earlier.
We get the punchline from that really weird sexual harassment scene.
Yeah, isn't that hilarious, guys? No, it's not. At first, right, Lois is like, oh my God, Clark, I heard about Lana on the news. Perhaps the very same news report Clark was listening to on the radio. I don't know, right?
Yeah.
But she, you know, hugs him and it's like, oh, okay. Whenever you have like tender, real moments between Clark and Lois at this point, it's nice because I do, and that's why I don't like this scene and the whole thing, right, among other things, because it's like, They play up the fact that they don't like each other like way too much, in my opinion. So whenever they can have like a true human definitely. Moment between themselves, I'm like, oh, that's nice. I liked that. But
I totally agree. And then of course she says, you know, but the next time you grab my ass,
I'm gonna take your
I'll
head with me.
Your hand with me when I go. While I do think that scene is really stupid and not worth the punchline or doesn't earn the punchline, I do think that this is a great Lois moment because it's like it shows her like both sides really beautifully, where it's like Lois actually has an enormous amount of empathy and heart and compassion. She's incredible. But then she's also still just like a tough ass lady that is not going to put up with any sexual harassment, even from her grieving friend. So I really like that.
And in The Companion, Erica Durance had this to say about the scene. She said, quote, sometimes she thinks he does things that are cute, but she knows he loves Lana. And I really think that's where she thinks he's at and that he was just dealing with that tragedy. So Lois was just saying, okay, you know what? I took him for the team, okay? Do it again and maybe I won't believe you. But this time, it's okay. So she lets him get away with it. So,
yep. And that's exactly how she plays it. I mean, she's got a lot of intention in her performance. Like, whenever you do see her on the commentary or hear her on the commentary, she talks about how she intended a scene. I'm like, yep, you pulled it off. That's exactly what you said. You know, she's a great actor, I think.
Absolutely. So then we get Martian Manhunter and Clark. They wrap up, talk about lessons from Jor-El and destiny and, you know, humanity and never going to stop being human and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's similar to the lot of the scenes they have, as we said. I mean, I do like here, he's in the earlier scene, but he's like, I'm not going to apologize for being raised to care about people. I'm like, I like that. I love that about Superman. That's a huge component of the character, especially his version.
It's huge. Yeah, it's huge for me. And I think that when he has that argument with other characters, it falls a little bit flat because they use it so often, but it's really interesting with Martian Manhunter because he's coming at it from such a foreign, you know, perspective. Like, he, the only reason he cares about Earth is because Clark's on it. Like, he has no other interest.
Well, like, what is he doing? Like, is he go to other planet? Like, we were saying, like, where is he? What does he go to? Is he still a Manhunter? Was he just for Jor-El? Like, I don't
know. I was like rooting so hard for a Martian Manhunter spinoff show.
Him as a cop or something.
Yeah, it's like, I want to see John Jones on the beat and then what he does in his downtime.
Right. Like, I wish, like, you know, we had season 8, we had a little bit of that, but like, they should have just been, you know what, Philip Morris is a well-known actor, a great actor. What, can we just have like an episode from his point of view?
Oh, that would have been so cool. You're right. You don't even have to do a whole spinoff. Just like one episode.
And then maybe people like that a lot and then they make a spinoff, right? That's the...
Exactly. It's a backdoor pilot, actually.
That's right. But anyway, so then we get Kelly Clarkson's Sober, which is took me back to 2007.
It's one of my
favorite
needle drops. Really good needle drop. I love it very much.
What I thought was so interesting was one of the lyrics is like 3 months, right, in the song. And I'm like, you know, a lot of Smallville premieres happen 3 months after the finale. This one did not. I'm like, it would have been better.
But the actual lyric is 3 months that I've been sober. And it's like, how does that?
That doesn't apply either.
I don't know if it's relevant to Supergirl yet.
I mean, you like it because it's like of the time. I mean, you know, the music of Smallville is the soundtrack of my life. And I get the feeling yours too. So so this was, you know, they pulling out Kelly Clarkson. Right? That's a big name, right? But it's the season premiere, right? They're pulling out the big names.
Yeah.
And it's a montage of where all the characters are at this point. We haven't seen Jimmy Olsen, so I don't know what he's doing. He's still on assignment somewhere. I was thinking to myself,
because I had forgotten, because I don't revisit season 7 a lot, right? I was like, when does Jimmy come back? Did she show up and he's all worried because he think Chloe died? Like, that's what I thought in my head. I thought he was going to show up at the hospital, like, oh my God, is Chloe dead? But he didn't. So I'm like, I guess he's in the next episode.
I'm going to find out.
We'll find out together, because this is my least encyclopedic memory is season 7. You know, so that's like a hazy area. But anyway. So all the characters that are here, we find out where they are, in the, right? So Chloe's burning her death certificate. That's a great point. She totally should have kept that for reasons, right? Just because you burn it doesn't mean the hospital is like died.
That was nothing but symbolic, and right. also removed a useful tool from your toolbox. But okay.
And then we have Lex. He's being escorted to his jail cell, and he pulls out a picture of him and Lana from his pocket. So we see Lana for the first time, and I'm like, okay. So that's the thing with Lex. I think he really did care about Lana, but he's a twisted evil guy, and that this is how it went, right? I mean, at this point,
as Lana says, he doesn't know how to love, but in the small, limited, and twisted way he knows how to love, he loved Lana,
right? And I believe that, and I think, you know, part of that rivalry with Clark is it helps that move along. But in this version, that's what we got. So
that's part of the reason season 6 is one of my favorite seasons. Is the whole like Lex and Lana? I think is so interesting in season 6. We won't get into it because we're like near the end here, but I love it. I love it.
I liked it better at the end when the show was like, "This is bad." Is when the show was like, "This might be good." That's when
totally agree.
Oh no, I understand.
Totally agree. Yeah, I mean, I think the way it like it, the way it turns, I'm just so into it, and I think it's also like the coolest and toughest Lana's ever been.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of Lana. We find out where she is. She's in Shanghai. So this
she's back to Shanghai. She's returned.
What is worse, Meredith, the green screen or her wig? Which is worse?
All right, Zach, I'm going to tell you that the wig is worse because if she were actually trying to blend in China,
exactly,
she would keep her dark hair that is natural to her and looks natural.
Kristen Crook, you're part Asian. This is the perfect time to use it to your advantage.
This is where you blend in, girl. That wig is so attention getting. Also, the green screen is terrible, and I find her dress vaguely racist. I can't put my finger on why, but I find it. It's like
some kind of appropriation going on with her wardrobe.
It's like appropriate-y, and it's also it like really diminishes the culture in a way. It's like a geisha dress. I'm not a fan.
This is a fail on every level.
It's so stupid. If they wanted her to wear a platinum wig, why don't they? Shanghai's not canon. Why didn't they have her go to Sweden? And then the blonde wig makes sense. If they were so into this idea of Kristen Krug in a platinum bob wig, then just have her be hiding out in a country that is made up of mostly blonde people.
Yeah, it was a choice. That they made. And then it's like they spend so much time on this reveal, like she takes off her wig. I'm like, yeah, I knew that was Lana. Like, was that a they act like it's a she act like she took off a Mission Impossible mask. I'm like, no, it's a wig.
Exactly. We're supposed to be like, oh.
And then she's looking up at the moon. And you know who's looking at that same moon in Smallville? Clark. Star-crossed lovers, moon-crossed lovers, I guess, right? So he's at the loft, you know, thinking about things. And then, remember Supergirl? Remember she was in this episode? There she is, right? She's looking at the moon as well and looking at her Kryptonian bracelet. She's obviously broken into a store and stolen some clothes, I guess, because she has
stolen a midriff shirt.
Yeah. I mean, it's the fashion, I guess.
Cropped hoodie.
The way they dressed her was,
So silly. And the fact that at this point she's wearing red and blue before she's even met Clark, before, you know what I mean?
Right.
All of it is silly. I really wish they'd had her in just sort of like jeans and a t-shirt for this scene. I think it would have been much more effective.
Or just her same
cool scene.
Well, just
or
the same robe.
Kryptonian outfit.
Like, yeah, she was wearing it.
It's on top of the water tower, just like next
is
to her.
Is it there? Like, is it, did someone get to find that?
She flies off without it? I think she flies off without
she
it.
She does.
I actually like rewound and I was like, she's not holding it.
Oh man. But yeah, but she pulls out her bracelet, which becomes, you know, important. That's kind of her octagonal disc is her bracelet, sort of,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally.
But then we find out she has a crystal as well. So she's got all kinds of things going on with her.
Yeah, she's got lots of gadgets.
She flies off. She flies up and away, and then flies into the camera, right? And then it's like on the Smallville water tower, which we hadn't seen it that way before, so that was interesting. But
into the
camera.
That's the reason I'm bugged by her like outfit, because it sort of takes me outside of what would otherwise be a very cool moment. But her outfit's so silly that I can't fully love it.
It's like, guys, come on, what are you doing? And I don't think we needed to see her again in this episode, because you think about other, when they introduce other characters, I know Brainiac wasn't a main character, but he was in a tag scene and that was it. And that was his only appearance in the beginning of season 5.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and then you think forward, like, Sam Witwer wasn't even in Odyssey.
Right.
I just have her save Lex for a couple scenes and then have her be a mystery you slowly reveal. This could have been, but I guess they really wanted that shot in the opening credits, right?
That's probably what they're like, exactly. Oh, we got it. That's exactly why they did it. They were like, we need a Supergirl flying shot. And
so clearly Clark needs to get on that because everyone else can fly.
He needs to get on it.
I thought I'd come by and see if I could get more than two words out of you.
Thanks, Chloe. I think I'll take a rain check.
Yeah, well, I guess you deserve a little bit of peace and quiet after sending the evil Bobsy twin to the sunny side of Mars.
Who's to say he's any more evil than I am?
Unless you have a second secret identity that I don't know about, I...
Chloe, when I heard about Lana, I went to find Lex. And I wasn't going to let him leave there alive. The irony is, I think it was the first time I ever really understood Lex. Loving someone is hard. It's difficult. But hate is so clean.
Maybe you need to feel this right now. I mean, anger is a natural human emotion.
Well, that's just it. It's when that phantom was trying to kill me and I was staring into my own eyes, I saw the monster that I could become if I wanted to. It was a reminder that I am not human.
Tell that to every person you've ever saved. Clark, whether you want to see it or not, you're one of us now. And the fact that you're from a galaxy far, far away just adds character. And you know, I'm here. No matter what side of nature or nurture happens to be winning out.
It goes both ways, Chloe.
Bizarro got a 9 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 4 out of 5. So Meredith, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Bizarro?
I give Bizarro a B. Not quite a B plus, but not a B minus either. Just straight middle ground B. I like it a lot. I think it's a very good episode. We commented on some things that make it less than A material for me, but I do think it's a really, really good premiere.
Yeah, I was struggling with this as well. I'm like, well, it's not A material because there's a lot of stuff. I'm like, this is very questionable and there's really unanswered questions here. And like, you really didn't think this thing through and you wiped out the entire, I guess season 6 technically did, but like the super powered army with like a shot.
What a bummer.
I'm like, come on. But I'm going to settle on B plus because I think it was for what it was very entertaining. You know, I mean,
it is a blast.
They're throwing all kinds of Superman stuff at you. Got Bizarro, Martian Manhunter, Supergirl, right? Lex Luthor, and all these things happening. So, despite a couple of hiccups and a couple of like questionable, like, hey, Chloe died, we're not going to talk about that or anything like that. So that's where I'm going to leave it. So, B for you, B plus for me. Let's just go down the tally board. Then we have a plus one for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket. That brings us to 60. So far, we have a plus one for episode title set and episode. That brings us to 51. We have a plus one for hospital visit. That brings us to 105.
Hospital That's one of my drinking game rolls. We drink for
absolutely.
A small medical
center. You must have a fun time watching the show.
We sure do.
And then we get a plus two for knockout to keep Clark secret. That brings us to 41. We have a plus one for main character death. That brings us to 16. And then finally, we have a plus one for not the last son of Krypton because of Kara. Obviously, that brings us to 8. There you have it. And Bechdel tests fail this episode, unfortunately, because Lois and Chloe are never alone talking, and Lana's in Shanghai, and Martha's not on the show anymore. So
it's not even that there are two women talking about anything that's not a man. There's just not two women talking.
So there you have it. Well, Meredith, this has been fantastic. I really enjoyed talking Bizarro with you.
I've had so much fun. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, as you can probably tell, I could talk Smallville all day.
Absolutely. Very impressed by your fandom. And so, hey, I'm going to have to come down to your brewery and get a beer sometime.
Definitely. We can do this over a beer. My husband and I own a brewery in Houston, City Acre. It's because we have an acre in the city. So we have a ton of outdoor seating, which has been great for COVID. We have a garden where we grow a lot of the ingredients that go in the beer and the food. So yeah, you should come check us out.
Awesome. And if people want to find you out there online and some of your work, where can they find you?
You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at xymarla. You can follow my work for Fangoria at fangoria.com. That's FANGORIA.com. And if you're interested in the brewery, you can follow us at City Acre Brewing.
All righty, will do. So as for me, you can find me on Twitter at moronzach. That's MOORENZCH. I'm also the host of another podcast on the United Federation of Podcasts. You can find us over there on Twitter at UFB Earth. And for the podcast here, you can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with 1S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And you can send us an email at Always Smallville, once again with 1S, at gmail.com. Well, there you have it. Season 7 is here. We are in, we're not even in the home stretch yet. We got a lot of seasons to go, but this is, you know, this is the shortest season. So we got only 20 episodes, unfortunately, this season to talk about it, but.
Over the hump.
That's right. We are over the hump. So, but yes, no, it's been fantastic talking small with you, and I look forward to having you back on the show down the road as well.
Yes, so, definitely. Please have me back.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be back next week talking about Kara, but until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Cavante Chillis, Darren Kirsch, Joy Deanberg, JJ Hodges, DJ DeWinna, Nathan Rothatcher, Casey Cochran, Nathan McKenzie, Jason Skipper, Steve Rogers, Joe Mickendo, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, John Curcio, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Thomas Navin, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Zachary Burkhalter, Mark Idzvapin, Alex Ramsey, Jason Davis, Patrick Bravo, Patricia Carrillo, Jacob Stevenart, Diana Bias, Corey Moore, James Bandini II, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clon Kant, Becca Zeifel, Jacob, Mariana Sachi, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Goso, Erica Flynn, Jared Gibbs, Anthony Anderson, Jasmine McGelly, Keith Falls, Lauren D., and Cody Thomas. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with 1S. Hope to see you there.